He calls an emergency meeting to try to sort out the growing crisis in the family. But Winston has other ideas. More Country Tales from Peter Tinniswood next week.
BBC Radio 4 Extra.
It's 5 o'clock and there's another hour of comedy in store. Oddballs, our four-part series by Don Howarth, is next. And then a sitcom by Gareth Gwynne and Benjamin Partridge about a fraudster dad who is released on parole and cons his way into living with his son. This week, Bob gets a job as a bingo caller. And Griff and Alice want to get Caris baptised in ankle tag in half an hour. Now, trouble looms for Fred Melthorpe over an unexpected inheritance from his estranged father.
Oddballs, the last of four short plays for radio by Don Howarth. Jack Acorn, disputed inheritance.
April 20th. Trouble with car en route. Arrived at dusk at Melthorpe Hall, where a cheerful rustic bounced in welcome.
Welcome, Mr. Melthorpe, sir, to Melthorpe Hall and the spreading acres here of your inheritance.
Thank you.
Jack Acorn, sir, estate manager to your late revered father, chauffeur, boon companion when required, and general factotum.
The linchpin, so I'm told.
Indeed, indeed. Come in, do. Joey, unload the master's bag. Garage is core.
Yes, Mr. Acorn.
Mind the broken flag, sir. We're much plagued these days by dilapidation. Oops!
So I see.
Dinner's on the boil.
Good.
No cook, I regret, these 30 years or more. But Mrs. Pottle, an honest soul, cycles up from the village for special occasions like this and prepares for us her simple fare.
Very kind.
Another dollop of pudding, young
colonel? Sir?
Oh, thanks. I've done very well.
The brandy, please, Mrs. Pottle.
Yes, sir.
Oh, yes. We had some rollicking times, your father and me. Great practical joker. On dinner party nights, guests would await their cars and carriages outside that low window there. We'd lift glowing coals from the fire and, reaching through the window, place them in the brim of their hats. Oh, how they howled. Oh, great chums we were, your father and I. You never knew him?
I was still in my mother's arms, I'm told, when he turned us both out.
I remember. The wronged woman at the door. Her cloak raised to protect her precious burden against the falling snow.
It was July, actually.
Exceptional weather that year. Your father made me his ward, and in due course his general factotum. And now he leaves to you, who he never saw, the whole estate. And to me, his companion in the years of rude health and his support in the years of decline, he leaves not so much as a sty of pigs or a suit of armour.
Yes, it must be looked into.
I ask no more.
I'll give myself a few weeks to see what might be done.
Then may I propose a guided tour, sir? Shall I bring the car round, say, at 9:30? Good morning, sir.
Good morning. What's this?
The white Rolls Royce, sir. Hood down, if that's your choice.
I can't meet people for the first time in this style.
You must. Have them tugging their caps from the word go.
We'll go in my car.
It's not a runner. What did you say was wrong with you, Joey?
Thermostat's gone. I noticed it blowing steam last night.
Can you fix it?
Oh, aye. I'll leave it for the day.
Your car's safe left here in Joey's hands. He's a youthful mechanical genius, though, of a roughish family. Pray, ascend. And this is our biggest village, Sodbury in the Marsh. A dumpish sort of spot, sir, as the name infers.
Good morning, Mr. Acorn. Have you come up long last over the roof?
Good morning, Mrs. Simcock. This gentleman, Mr. Melthorpe, is the new squire.
Pleased to meet you, sir. What about the roof?
Well, what about it?
It leaks.
Oh, get a bucket.
Bucket's filled.
Empty him.
Simcock is on his feet all day, queuing for his dole. He don't want to be arising in the dead of night and emptying buckets. Nothing is right here. The river busts its bank and floats the furniture out of the door. The old tenantry is waterlogged.
Oh, nowhere's perfect.
I'm pleased to have met you, Mrs. Simcock. We must see what can be done.
As and when, of course, we have the means.
What happens to all the rent money? That was supposed to go into a fund for repairs.
Spent many times over, Mrs. Simcock.
And we haven't been paid out, Mr. Melthorpe, sir, for our old uncle that was sold to Lord Blossom.
Your uncle was sold?
And me aunt. Sold as a brace to Lord Blossom's agent that was shooting nearby. Drove off with them with the bag in the back of his Land Rover.
Surely not.
Old retainers here are transferred like footballers. But nobody in Sodbury ever sees the face.
Now, this is Gallows Hill. And there are the gallows.
Hey, looking good, Nick.
Preserved and maintained by our local gallows society. We've an old country ceremony. Hanging the highwayman every leap year. A good number will have been strung up here over the centuries.
The gallows work?
Oh, the work, all right. Stand there, sir. By the trap.
Is this all right?
Oh, you're safe, sir. In my hands. Now, I, as the hangman, stand by this wooden lever and... No danger, sir. But if you'd been stood not beside the trap, but on it, with a rope for a necktie, it could have been all up with you.
Yes, I can see that. Is it safe to leave the gallows standing here?
Yes, sir. No rope, except on days we have a ceremonial mock hanging for fun and pleasure. It puts the wind up and when they grab for the gallows.
I suppose this passes for rustic fun.
That's it, sir. Rustic fun. I'd like to take you to see my walled garden by the river.
Oh, it's beautiful. It is impressive. How many people work here?
Young Joey comes to see to the greenhouses 3 days, or otherwise just myself.
It's splendid.
It's what you might call my life's work. I started as a youth, started at the bottom with the drains, big capacious drains to carry off the surplus water that plagues these parts. The squire, your father, allowed me time off to work here.
You must go on with it, please.
The one strand of beauty, he called it, in the desolation of the estate.
It's magnificent.
It's preserved my sanity. Burdened by the cares of office, I find solace and peace at one with nature and in the service of my fellow men.
Sure.
Would you care for a walk? See our wishing well. This is it. Quite old. Give me hand to raise the cover. Mind, it's heavy. There now. Never runs dry. Nothing runs dry around here.
Is it good water?
Oh, I shouldn't have thought so after what's said to have been dumped down over the centuries.
Rubbish?
Bodies. Bleached bones, I'm told, lie deep down at the bottom. Oh. You can get down by those iron hoops in the wall, if you minded.
No, no thanks.
They'd get the victim in and then close the cover. No man on earth would have the strength or footing to raise it from the inside.
Let's move on.
There's a saying round here. Let's put the tin lid on it. You see what that's derived from. Would you give me hand to close the cover? We don't want any accidents. There now. Could you drink a pint, sir?
Cheers.
Your sparkling good health, sir. That's Jack Rawnsley, the old hangman over there. I'd get him to tell you his story, but he was in the papers and on the telly, and he don't like no more publicity. He's practically given up hanging.
Pity to lose a nice hobby.
Sam Dodge's impounded Mr. Melthorpe's car.
Well, sit down, Joey.
What do you have, Joey?
Oh, thanks, sir. I'm underage.
What happened?
It needed quite a bit done to it, so the lads at Dodge's garage gave me a tow-in and a ramp to work at. Should have finished it before Dodgy came back from the races, but he come back soon. Cleaned out and ratty. He said, tell old Acorn he can have the car back when he's paid the last lot of bills.
Rubbish. We owe him nothing. I'll get him on the telephone.
I'm sorry I got your car impounded, sir.
Oh, not your fault.
Watch Acorn.
What do you mean?
You were down Sodbury way talking to Mrs. Simcock today.
News spreads.
No doubt she told you Acorn pocketed the proceeds from the sale of her uncle.
I heard some sort of tale.
It's true. He embezzles the rent money. He pawned the old squire's suit of armour. He nobbled Lord Potter's horse.
Okay.
I thought you might like to know.
Okay. You've told me.
We'll get your car back. Acorn knows how to put the screw on Sam Dodgy.
Good.
This is the best roof for a panoramic view of the Hurle estate. The river there, silver in the twilight, making its slow way to the estuary and no doubt keeping the good people of Sodbury moist en route. Oh, more than 100 men left these acres to go to the Great War in 1914. No doubt you had notions of restoring the old estate to its ancient grandeur.
Modest notions.
Me too, in my time. I cherished impractical notions. Don't waste the years of your young life here as I wasted mine.
What would you rather have done?
Oh, married, perhaps. There was never time for it. Travel? I always had a yen for Tasmania, the old Van Diemen's land of ill repute, where they used to export the awkward squad.
May 16th. Nearly a month here now. Still no notion of what to make of Jack Acorn. This laugh of his. He presumes too much. Found him at breakfast time the other morning, sleeping on the couch in the library with his clothes in a heap on the floor, and his boots keeping warm on the radiator. Countered my query, as often, with a sort of cheerful insolence.
An ancient privilege, sir, conferred on my humble self by your esteemed father, here departed.
A privilege? To sleep in the library?
No, to study. I shot the Emeritus Professor of Comparative Pyrotechnics from Leeds University.
You shot a professor?
Your father had given the academical gentleman a day's shooting, but nobody, it seems, had thought it necessary to explain the aim. He potted the beaters instead of the birds.
No.
It was more than youthful flesh and blood could stand. I seized a gun and floored him.
Killed him?
Just winged. But he was taken to the infirmary, where they dispatched him in short order.
And what has this got to do with you dossing down in the library?
I'm coming to that. Alarmed by the unfortunate incident, the old squire withdrew me from the grammar school forthwith, divining an upstart disposition which education could only further inflame. Then he was put in a good mood by a win on the horses and, in compensation, granted me the use of the library to round off my interrupted learning. I aspired at one time to the hand of a young lady, and pursued scholarship here to make myself worthy of her. You see, sir, there's usually a simple explanation of everything.
But we haven't reached it yet.
Reached what, sir?
An explanation of why you were sleeping in the library.
I work here, in my spare time, renovating the panels.
Through the night?
Through the evening hours. Then it's too late to homeward plod my weary way.
I see. June 10th. Here nearly 2 months now. Little progress. Acorn always ready in his jolly way to deride my ideas for development on modern lines.
A golf course, sir? A marina, sir? Paragliders on the hillside?
Get the impression all the time that he's up to something, but no idea what. I tackled him about bowling round in the old Rolls Royce.
A stylish runabout, sir.
You didn't ask permission.
Respectfully, sir, that's not required.
Why not?
Well, sir, it's my Rolls Royce.
Your Rolls Royce?
Yes, sir. Conferred on me by your late father, here departed, in gratitude for services rendered and in lieu of wages.
Yesterday, in Acorn's absence, young Joey cycled up with Mrs. Simcock, propelling her up the hill with his palm against her shoulder blades, still nagging on about the sale of her uncle.
The plot thickens, sir. He's come back.
Your uncle's come back?
60 miles he's come, over hill and dale, across field and fen, over walls, under fences, across railways and the motorway. Guided by the homing sense, us sophisticated persons have all but lost.
That's interesting.
The birds have it, the homing sense. Off to South Africa when it begins to get parky here. And cats and sheep, I've heard. And certainly dogs. He turned round and round in the corner, then flopped down to sleep.
So, happy ending?
Not quite, sir. Lord Blossom's agent is on to us now for a refund.
Well, that's fair enough, I suppose. If you mean to keep your uncle.
Yes, sir, but we never had the money for him. It was intercepted by Mr. Acorn. Went straight into his notorious satchel.
Right, Mr. Acorn. I asked you last week for a note on the rented houses.
Not quite compiled yet.
What records do you keep?
None as such, sir. It's a system devised by your late revered father. It works very well in practice.
How does it work?
Simplicity itself. The tenants pay into the rent fund, and the money from the rent fund pays for the good repair of their dwellings.
And you'd say their dwellings were in good repair?
The rents are low. Mere peppercorns.
And what record do you keep of these transactions?
No need for a record, sir. The rent fund is administered by me personally.
And how is this represented to the Inland Revenue?
We've no truck with them.
So such money as you collect goes on repairs?
Every penny.
Do you have bills from the repairers?
They're cash people.
I'm told you pocket the rent money.
No.
And have done for many years past.
A small part of it, sir. That modicum of rent derived from my own houses.
You own some houses?
A score at Sodbury in the Marsh and half a dozen better houses at Upper Sodbury.
Acquired how?
From your late lamented father, in affection, as he used to say, and in lieu of wages.
What else do you claim to own?
Do own, sir. I have the deeds. A parcel of land here and there amounting to 150 acres. 2 farms at Sodbury Waters. And, of course, the white Rolls Royce.
Midsummer's Day. Came back from London unexpectedly at dusk to find a country fair in full swing. Nobody told me anything about it. House ablaze with lights, drunken dancers clodhopping round the lawn. Maidens performing unseemly acrobatics. Wrestling bouts. Naked swimming in lake. Pig bowling. Pillow fighting. A cycle race in which Mrs. Simcock floored at first bend. Jack Acorn at table by the gate, taking entrance money from late arrivals.
Thank you, Vicar. Be a tent straight ahead.
What's going on?
Mr. Melthorpe, and we thought you weren't going to make it. I said to Joey here, didn't I, Joey? Didn't I say the new squire's going to miss the fun?
I didn't know any fun was on offer.
Yes, sir. Midsummer's Day, traditional. The whole district for miles around joins in our rustic capers, but strangers from afar can't be expected to know. Joey, you should have minded to apprise the new squire.
I weren't here. Not my job.
Demarcation. Trade unionism. Not to be contemplated in the merry England we now revive for a few evening hours in our annual junketings.
What's going on over there?
What, sir? We're...
It's Tom Rusk. They're frog marching him up to the gallows.
Right, Mr. Acorn. Get across and stop them.
I can't leave your satchel.
We'll look after your satchel. Get over and stop them. And don't keep looking back.
Tommy Ross.
Get after him.
He's fearful we'll make off with his satchel. We won't get very far. Just feel the weight. Oh, all the day's takings.
Where do they go?
Only Jack Acorn, Esquire, knows that.
I bet you could find his hoard if you tried.
I dare say I could, sir. Especially if encouraged by an honorarium or douceur.
OK. When he comes back, tell him to see the rope is removed from the gallows. Then shoo these people away.
It's a few thousand to shoo away.
Yes. Not forcibly. Stop the music for a start. Leave the lights on. And tell Mr. Acorn I'll see him in the office at 9:30 on Monday morning.
I'm sorry, sir, that, absent as you were in London all week, we omitted to forewarn you of our little traditional celebration on Saturday evening.
What happened to the proceeds?
Here, sir, in my satchel, en route to the bank, and thence to such worthy charities as you, in your wisdom, may guide us to nominate.
Thank you. You're sacked.
I'll go after Harvest Thanksgiving.
You'll go nowhere until the finances of this place are sorted out.
Which might well carry us through to Harvest Thanksgiving. It's a great event with us sons of the soil. We fill the church, you might recall me saying, with the fruits of our cultivation, not least those from the walled garden here, which I have the honour to tend. It's a centuries-old obligation on the house. Our late departed father had grieved to see it unfulfilled.
Our father?
Yes, sir. Our common father, if the expression may be sanctioned.
I don't believe it.
Ask anybody. Great companions we became, father and son, though he allowed me only the title of ward. Strange man, strange ways. I do not seek now the older son's proper, full entitlement, but I had hoped that, rising in your esteem by my handiworks and bonhomie, I might see a reasonable portion, say a half of the estate, restored to me, ex gratia, by your hand, as between gentlemen, indeed, the sons of a fine country gentleman, amiably and discreetly, without recourse to the ruinous courts.
No.
No?
No.
Then it is not only my fraternal self you might face across the courts of justice, but half the populace of these swampy acres. Your father, our father, lacking occupation, was much given to philandering and sired largely in the neighbourhood. Some 50 or 100 souls perhaps may have a claim to pursue, invigorated by the fair wind of legal aid.
I'll see you in jail long before you can pull off that sort of move.
Jail?
Jail.
For claiming my portion?
For pocketing everybody else's portion? Where's the money gone?
What money?
The rent money from the houses. The cost of repairs nobody's ever seen done. The money from the sale of Mrs. Simcox's uncle.
An absurd story.
Where is it? Where are the receipts?
You have till Harvest Thanksgiving. After that, I call in the fraud squad.
We plough the fields and stands on the mercy of the land.
Autumn. Morning mist lingers now along the river. Choir practicing harvest hymns. Gardeners busy preparing their offering for the church. None more zealously than Mr. Acorn, who uses big rowing boat to ferry his produce from his garden by the river to the church. No pretense of working on papers. No attempt either to decamp with the swag. And on our part, no success in discovering where he hides his hoard. If indeed he has a hoard.
Try the wishing well, Mrs. Simcox says. There's bays low in the well, she says, used of old for hiding treasure.
Yes.
Climb down by the iron hoops in the wall. Can you manage that?
Nothing here.
Persist. There might be lower down.
No, there's nothing. Oh, let's get back up. Who's that leaning over at the top?
Only me, sir. All well down there.
Harvest Thanksgiving Day, morning. Still no success in finding Acorn's hoard, but signs he's getting ready to make a break for it.
Yes, sir. When everybody's in church this evening, he asked me to check the oil and water in the Rolls Royce. Another shoal of brochures from Tasmania in yesterday's post.
You reckon he's all set to drive to Tasmania?
His dream spot. I reckon he's hid his hoard somewhere handy. While everybody else is giving praise in the service, he'll pick it up with a roller and off.
Which way do you guess?
He can only go one way. The main gate. The lodge gate and the west gate are chained up.
Ah, good lad.
We just summoned Mr. Parker, the policeman, and wait in hiding at the main gate for him to appear with his booty.
This is the second hymn. What's the time?
7:15.
Now, why hasn't he appeared?
Shit, listen. There's somebody treadling up on a bike. Oh, it's Mrs. Simcock.
Evening, Constable Parker. What are you waiting here for?
Mr. Acorn. Have you seen his car?
Oh, he's duped you. He ain't gone by car. He's loaded his hoard into the boat.
Oh, where from?
From his garden. It was all hid away in them great drains he installed.
Oh!
Don't just groan. Get down there. Stop him. You too, Constable Parker. Draw your truncheon and have your handcuffs ready.
Come on!
By the time we arrived at the jetty, Mr. Acorn, rowing with a strong, steady stroke, had already opened a stretch of clear water. His boat, under the weight of his hoard, rowed with the prow rearing into the air and the stern almost awash.
Stop, Mr. Acorn! Heave to! I want the money for me uncle! Arrest him, Constable Parker!
Stop, sir! In the name of the law!
Come on! Down the towpath! We can nab him at the point.
Hang on. Hang on. Let him go.
Let him go?
Let him go. Leave him to the mercy of the oceans.
And so Mr. Acorn, his treasure aboard, rowed on into the autumn dusk, carried by the current and his own powerful strokes into the estuary and the open sea beyond. And thence, it can only be supposed, to the Tasmania of his long aspiration.
In Oddballs, Jack Acorn was played by John Webb, Fred Melthorpe by Stephen Tomlin, Joey by Alex Trinder, and Mrs. Simcock by Pauline Jefferson. All other parts were played by members of the cast. Oddballs was written by Don Howarth, produced by Sue Wilson, and directed in Manchester by Julie Beckett.
That was the last in the series. Next week, John Sessions stars in a comic satire set in the struggling world of newspapers, Electric Ink.
Classic comedy on BBC Radio 4 Extra.
Now, let's take it from the top, shall we? Now, we need someone for the solo. Born from afar on the gentle breeze.
Permission to speak, sir?
Yeah.
I'd like to volunteer to be born from afar on the gentle breeze.
All right. Everybody ready? One, two.
As I walked home on a summer night, when stars in heaven were shining bright, far away from the footlights' glare, into the sweet and the scented air, the grateful Cornish chant,
born from afar in the gentle breeze, joined in the murmur of summer sea, distant towns.
Joe.
What's the matter, sir?
You came in too soon.
Oh, sorry, sir.
Let's try it again. From into the sweet and scented air. One, two.
into the sweet and the scented air of a quaint old Cornish town.